Views and opinions expressed on this program are those of the guests and contributors, and not necessarily those of WFSU Public Media.
What's the 411? You're tuned in to 411 Teen. 411 Teen is a weekly program for teens and other interested folks. 411 Teen provides a forum to examine and discuss various issues and events that confront, intersect, and sometimes interrupt our daily lives. I'm Dr. Liz Hollyfield. The skills gap is of growing concern to corporate America. Employers complain about not having enough skilled workers to fill positions. Consider this. By 2020, there will be 1.4 million computer science-related jobs available and only 400,000 graduates with the necessary skills. Additionally, it's expected that 3.5 million cybersecurity jobs will be unfilled by 2021 due to the skills gap. How can companies address this skills gap? How can companies tap into the talent that's out there, especially in underserved communities and in post-9/11 veterans? Joining me today is Dr. Art Langer, chairman and founder of an organization called Workforce Opportunity Services. Workforce Opportunity Services is a leading nonprofit committed to developing untapped talent from underserved and veteran communities. Altogether, Workforce Opportunity Services has partnered with 60 companies and 40 locations throughout the country, including companies like Prudential, Johnson & Johnson, General Electric, and Chubb, and some here in Florida. Workforce Opportunity Services recruits, educates, and trains young high school graduates from underserved communities and post-9/11 veterans. The goal is to develop their skills so that they can be employed in major companies nationwide. Dr. Langer, welcome to 411 Teen.
Pleasure to be here.
Yes, I've been looking forward to talking with you and picking your brain and hearing your expertise. You are the founder of Workforce Opportunity Services. It's a nonprofit. But tell us just exactly what is it? I mean, and what did you feel? Why did you feel it was needed?
Well, I am a professor at Columbia University, and was doing a lot of research work in what we would call underserved communities. And I happened to have some students who were engaged in a HUD, Housing and Urban Development sponsored grant, and they came to me for help. And we ran a four-year study. We learned a lot about the challenges that companies have in assimilating underserved populations, including post-9/11 veterans. We learned a lot about what the challenges were to higher education. And perhaps most important is what we learned and what I concluded was that there needed to be an alternative supply chain of talent in a different way, one that did not necessarily negate the need for higher education, but provided talent in different ways. And most importantly, we concluded that the talent was there. You know, sometimes we call it untapped talent. Mm-hmm. I like to call it hidden talent.
Mm-hmm.
Talent that's there that we don't know it's there. So when, you know, as you brilliantly talked about the shortage of skills, it's breathtaking. And yet, what we found is that there are pockets of these extremely talented young people who really don't have a way to get through the traditional system to be discovered.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Well, I applaud you in doing this and recognizing. Did you particularly have any connection with this target population?
Well, I was born in the Bronx, actually about five blocks from Yankee Stadium. My dad was a Teamster, actually during the Jimmy Hoffa era. He didn't make it past the eighth grade. Nobody in my family had ever gone to college. And I was fortunate enough to be discovered to have artistic talent in junior high school. I grew up in a very tough neighborhood. But with some coaching and support, I was able and I was pushed to apply to the famous High School of Music and Art, and actually made it there. And that changed my life. That changed my trajectory by establishing the fact that I could be involved with people that were from other disciplines and areas to show me and build my self-esteem that I could do things that I never thought I could do.
I heard your talk, your TED Talk, and your story is really especially interesting and I think very motivating to the population that you are addressing. You took 18 years to finish school. Would you just elaborate on that a little bit? I think it's it says a lot about you and, you know, and what you're doing. And I think that, you know, you not only have developed an organization that really taps into a population that definitely have the ability and haven't had the opportunity. And I think the fact that you, some ways, have been there and done that is important.
Yes, so as it, with many individuals from my world, I got married extremely young. I had a family and found very quickly that it wasn't going to be, I didn't have much guidance in terms of how to go to college, what to do. I wasn't sure. And even though I began to go during the day, once I got married and had a couple of kids, I realized that I had to make a living. And so I moved over to computer science, which was a new field in those days, and went through that 128 credits at night. And it took me 9 years to get my undergraduate degree. At the same time, I was working in the field in computer operations, held a couple of jobs, and that was a long trek for me, but I made it. I graduated, and at that point, I got a break, and I ended up in the famous Coopers & Lybrand, at the time was the Big Eight accounting firms, because I had an unusual knowledge of certain computer operations and technologies, and I was told at some point that I could be a partner of the firm, but that I ought to get my accounting credit. So I did my MBA at night. There was only one university in which I could do it part-time and actually have the equivalent of an undergraduate in accounting and an MBA. So I took an extended program, which took me another 5 years. Mm. And when I started to recruit from Coopers & Lybrand at Columbia University, before I knew it, I was on an advisory board and then I was teaching a class. And somewhere through the whole process, they offered me a special situation in which they wanted me to take over an area of technology at the university, strongly suggested that I pursue my doctoral work, and if I were to get in, then obviously they would also help pay for it. And that took me 2 tries. I didn't get in the first time, but I got in the second time. And I was so experienced with balancing school and work that I did my doctoral work in 3 years. So you add all those up, and that's 17, 18 years.
Yeah. And then what, in 2005, is that when the workforce was created?
It was when we were incorporated as a charity. We started the work in 2003 with Prudential. They were our partner, as I would call them. And in 2005, we actually formed the charity. And today, we probably, Prudential has hired away about over 200 people from us.
Wow, that's impressive. How did you, in starting, how did you identify the businesses for partnership? And what does a partnership involve? What does that mean?
Well, I think the first thing that we've learned in the era that we're in, I kind of call it, the consumer revolution. The consumer and companies are going through massive change. And I think the first thing that I wanted to do was to create a systemic solution. I wanted to create something in which would abide by supply and demand but still be a nonprofit charity. And the first part of that is, what's the demand? What's the need? And as we've now seen so many years later, some of the frustrations that corporations and other organizations are having with finding the specific skills that they need. And that was the niche area that I looked into. I felt strongly that a lot of people like myself were just not in a situation where we could go away to 4 years of college. Mm-hmm. I'm not against that, but right. It's not for everybody. So I wanted to create a way of working closely with companies that would define what they needed for early career talent, that would bring diversity, people from their communities, and partner with institutions of higher education. You know, there's 4,600 institutions of higher education in the United States. We didn't need another one. What we needed was someone to bring everybody together.
Mm-hmm.
And that's really what we did. So one of the things we do, as we call ourselves WOS, we have development people that understand how to design curriculum. And it wasn't just the technical skills. In reality, finding talent and being able to teach them the technical things is easy. It's really not that hard. What is harder is the transformation into the workplace, the soft skills, as we call mm-hmm. them, knowing how to speak in a business, knowing how to behave and act, understanding the cultures that are different from those of places where I came from. It's just very, very different. And there's little abilities in our formal operations and institutions that really prepare people to succeed in that. And, you know, companies are not patient. They're not democracies. They never have been. And they really are not designed to be able to handle some of those things. So we found that niche area where we could provide tremendous value at an economic return that made sense and gave companies the one thing they really needed. They're risk averse. They mm-hmm. they don't want to bring in underserved populations
right.
and then have to get rid of these individuals.
Mm-hmm.
So we're the employer. We take care of the background checks. We take the risks. We're the surrogates. We pay the 100% health care coverage. We provide education expenses in a way that works, not how you reimburse somebody that has no money to pay for it to begin with.
Exactly.
We pay that up front. We help people open bank accounts. We lend them money interest-free. We give money away. We work with their families. We buy clothing. We take out all of those things that that companies cannot do and institutions of higher education cannot do either.
We're going to take a brief break. I'm talking with Dr. Art Langer. He is the creator of Workforce Opportunity Services. We'll get right back at you in about 60 seconds. If you're just tuning in, the program is 411 Teen. This edition has a special guest, Dr. Art Langer. He is the creator of Workforce Opportunity Services. The supply chain of education is not working. There's a pool of talent who just can't access four-year degrees, either because of lack of family support or lack of money. Additionally, higher education institutions need to adapt more quickly to ensure their students have the skills they need for the workplace. Workforce Opportunity Services fills that void. Dr. Langer, you were just talking about all the things you do to make your clients, your students, successful.
Yes, and that is the ultimate mission. And the way I would phrase it is, our goal is to create good citizens. But the first step, in my opinion, to create a good citizen is you need a job.
Mm-hmm.
And everything begins to happen once you get that job.
Because you feel good about yourself.
You feel good about yourself, mm-hmm. and you begin to think about the contributions that you can make to your own families, societies, giving back. It all starts there. But without employment, it's very hard to talk about all those other things.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Well, I know your mantra seems to be recruit, educate, train, and plant, place. Everything I read always came up. Recruit, educate, train, and place. Can we just talk a little bit about the process? Tell us about the recruitment process. Who, where, requirements, who and what are you looking for?
Well, the first thing we do is we have a partner, a client, who has a need, whether that need is for certain areas, certain communities, and we together form an approach of what we want to do and the kind of individuals we're looking for. At that time, WOS effectively becomes the talent hunters. We go find that talent. Mm-hmm. If it's high school individuals, if it's college graduates that are owe a lot of money and are having trouble finding a job or don't know how to go find a job, or veterans, we then go out and recruit the talent that fits. And when I say fit, it's like I said before, the intellectual piece is easy to find. Mm-hmm. But if you're looking for someone that has to interact with people for a job, then you need to find people that like that, that have certain personalities. If it's a back office technical software or hardware development, that's a different type of individual. So we go out and we do it the hard way. We go in the streets. We go in the high schools. We go on the bases. We go out there and find that talent. And that's something that corporations will find it hard to do. We meet with families. We have open houses. We go to the high schools. We have conferences. We advertise.
So you match the corporation with the client?
Correct.
Uh-huh.
Right.
Okay.
And that's the first piece of the recruitment. And then it's competitive. We take more than what will fit.
Mm-hmm.
We give these individuals a chance to experience it. We see what their levels of dedication are. It has nothing to do, you know, I don't look at SAT scores. I don't even look at it. We watch behaviors and people who want to succeed. We recognize that almost all of them have needs and have things that we need to do to develop in them. But we're looking for people who want to be there. Do they show up to the what we call our pre-cert, which means they're actually coming to school for a period of time until they get selected. And we have, we call it our secret sauce. There is science behind it. I've developed an instrument that measures probability for successes. I've published four papers on this, and it works for us. And the important thing is that our partners, our clients, our companies can be as involved as they want to be, and we're 100% transparent. So we measure the technical capabilities, which is easy, and then we start thinking about the matching. How does this individual match up with this organization? Do they fit? Do they provide the kind of potential that we could build on? And are they dedicated and want to do it?
In the within the populations that you are addressing, the underserved, the post 9/11, are there particular deficits that you have observed in these populations? And if so, what are they and why are they there? And the reason I asked is we know that education is the schools are graduating folks who really aren't marketable. And I'm wondering if this particular population is missing out on some components of skill development. So, and would like to just hear your observations on that.
Well, let's take the high school graduate because mm-hmm. I think there's a lot of misunderstanding there. You know, you'll go to a high school principal and you'll say, I have this special program, and they'll say, oh, you want kids that don't go to college. And then that principal will say, you know, 98% of my graduates go to college.
Oh.
And, of course, I'll ask the next question is, well, how long are they staying?
That's right.
And then they look, they give me that, you know, that Nixon look like they don't know what the hell's going on. So let me just give you a story, which I think will answer the first part of the question. So you get a young man or woman in an underserved population that gets, let's say, some money and scholarship to go to a community college. But in order to get that scholarship money, he or she has got to take 12 credits to be a full-time mm-hmm. student. And at home, there's only one parent, maybe, usually a mom. And that mother will say, you know, it's great that you want to go to school, but son, you're going to have to get a job. So that individual likely goes to McDonald's or Starbucks or whatever it might be and works a 35-hour week. So now they're working a 35-hour week and they're taking 12 credits, no guidance. How long do you think that's going to last? And what ends up happening is they can't make it through the first term. They can't carry a load of 12 credits. There's no support from home. And then they're permanently in making hamburgers. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
That's the first example of the realities of what happened. And none of this is advertised in the sense, I mean, I can tell you community colleges in the Northeast that are celebrating a 7% graduation rate. 7%.
Really?
7. Not 70, 7. And only 7% of those move on to a four-year college. That's not a good number.
No.
Now, in our veteran populations, they're completely lost. They're coming from a whole different world. Many of them went in because they were tough kids to begin with. And they come out, and they have complex family situations, and they have no understanding of a corporate culture at all. So it's very hard for them to figure out how to look for a job. They don't know how to express the value of what they've learned in the armed forces. And in many cases, they're an older version of some of the high school kids that we're working with at 18 years old. And you put all that together, and then you don't really have a wonderful way of supplying talent to organizations that are running around and have a lot of other things to do, and are not used to going out and finding people and developing them in that context.
Yeah. And I would think, and you've already addressed this, that in putting that individual in a employment situation, he may have, like you said, the technical skills. He may have the technical education, but what about the interpersonal component of it? What about knowing how to dress appropriately, how to talk appropriately in a corporate setting? Those are all the kinds of things that I hear you say you teach.
We do all of that. And mm-hmm. The other thing, we go a step further. We don't pull up the bus at the end of this and drop off 10 or 15 people and say good luck to the company.
Okay.
We provide for every 20 people a client service manager that is there with them, working with the companies. Companies are guilty of this as well. If you've ever seen some of these internships, it's not anybody's fault, but everybody's lean and mean, everybody's mm-hmm. working hard, and all of a sudden someone gets tapped on the shoulder and says, hey, I've got this kid from the neighborhood, and
right.
give him something to do. And the manager looks, yo, you got to be kidding me.
Exactly.
That's not a winning hand.
Mm-mm.
You have to be lucky to get through that. And some are. But the reality is we provide all of that support. We're working with these individuals. And when a manager comes to us and says, you know, Joe's doing pretty well, but he seems very shy, we're going to work on that.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Or when Joe can't get to work because his car broke down one day, we're going to pick him up and get him to work.
Okay.
Now, if we're not there, what happens? It doesn't work.
Mm-hmm.
And when you're dealing in this type of population, these are high probability issues.
Mm-hmm.
And there's an absolute lack of support across the line. So we meet that void. And it's a try before you buy. So once the company makes a decision to hire, which is usually at least 6 to 8 months.
Oh, okay.
They know what they're getting at that point.
Mm-hmm.
So therefore, our retention is at 90%.
Wow, that is very impressive.
And they don't leave.
Mm-hmm.
You know all this stuff that you've been reading about millennials?
Right.
And leaving?
Yeah.
Well, these individuals have complex family structures in their community. And they stay.
Well, that's,
they want to be part of that community.
That's great. What is the talent acquisition pipeline?
Well, it's one in which you have to go from, in my opinion, from giving that responsibility to universities to do alone to one where organizations are going to have to compete for it, find it, and get involved.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what we're providing. We're providing an alternative supply chain of that talent in a different way. We still want our individuals to get that four-year college degree, mm-hmm. but they're going to get it similar to the way Art Langer got it. And there okay. are some distinct advantages in getting it that way.
Yes.
It's not for everybody. But I've been adamant about the fact that most of our population is going to have to go through college in a different way. And we haven't even talked about the debt that's been piled up by many of that nobody wants to talk about.
That's true. But, you know, you hit on something that, and you said it much earlier, when you said everyone does not have to go to college. And I applaud you in saying that, because that seems to be the focus of general public education today. They teach to the test. They have to perform at a certain level. Teachers are reimbursed for having their students so that they perform at that level. There's a lot of pressure to have the traditional types of pathways. You do the test, you do well, you get in school, you know, and that is not realistic. Do you think that the education system, public education system, is doing a disservice to this population?
Well, I think I'm not giving up on the fact that everybody should eventually have a college degree.
Mm-hmm.
I just think the way you get it needs to be different, and the way it gets funded needs to change. But I do feel that we are creating a dream that cannot be realized by a lot of these individuals in what we would, I'll put it in quotes, traditional education system. And things change. There are new ways in which people can become dedicated to their own personal development and education. That doesn't necessarily mean that the first step is to go away for 4 years of college and get a degree that will not necessarily put me in a position to succeed financially from an employment point of view. Just to give you an idea, in the skills area, Dallas has 37,000 openings for construction workers right now because of all the people that are moving into the area.
Mm-hmm.
There's an incredible skills education for people in that area. That doesn't mean that they shouldn't get educated. It doesn't mean that they shouldn't go to college. But there are alternative ways in which one begins that process. And by getting a union job isn't such a bad thing. It doesn't mean that that's the job forever either. People will have multiple careers over their time. I think we've lost a little bit of our creativity, and I think, unfortunately, the public education systems, which is state by state, is so complicated and so bogged down in politics and local school districts that it's very hard for them to provide the kind of agility that's necessary today.
Mm-hmm. How do you design a program to meet the needs of your clients?
Well, we kind of do it the hard way. What brings value? One is finding talent, and that's an important thing.
Mm-hmm.
The second thing is, how do you relate the skills that they need to ones that can be developed, both soft and technical skills? And how do you provide the right selection of the talent that will succeed? And then finally, how do you make that a systemic thing? And here's the very thing. When I think about the fact that Prudential has hired over 200 people, what does that tell you? It worked.
Yeah.
And it doesn't work from an executive level. The line managers are now sitting there saying, we want more. This is great. This is wonderful. Not to mention what comes with that is local presence from the community, diversity, and 94% of the money that we get goes back to the individuals in healthcare coverage, in education, payroll, and I always like to say that at Christmas, my kids buy their families gifts, And you know what we call that? Consumer spending.
Mm, yeah.
And with all of our partners, like, North Florida is a partner for us. If I'm paying for a kid's tuition and money, where's that money going? It's going back into the state education system, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
And that's where we want it. So this is the kind of economic progress that allows us to create centers of economic development in a way that's maintainable because the buyer wants more. It's got to go beyond the buyer just being nice.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. To keep it going, they'll have to want more, and you'll have to be providing what they need for them to want more. Otherwise, they lose interest.
Right. And, mm-hmm. and you know, everybody hears our story the first time and says, this is too good to be true. But let me tell you the second time when I bring the people that have been successful to the open houses, and they articulate, and how proud you can be of these kids when they articulate. When I look at these kids in 6 months, what they've accomplished is unbelievable.
Well, I applaud you. That's about all I can say. We applaud you. We need more of that, and more people recognizing that this population has the ability, but they lack the access to the necessary skills and training. A lot of them may not even have computers in their home. So, I applaud what you're doing. You're tuned in to 411 Teen, and I'm Dr. Liz Holifield, and I've been talking with Dr. Art Langer. He is the founder and chairman of Workforce Opportunity Services. We're going to take a brief break, but we'll return momentarily.
Views and opinions expressed on this program are those of the guests and contributors and not necessarily those of WFSU Public Media.
Workforce Opportunity Services is about empowering individuals with financial independence and professional and economic success. Dr. Langer, would you agree with that?
Yes. Okay. Absolutely.
Okay, because that was kind of encapsulated what I was getting from it, what I feel after having read about it, that this really is what you're doing. Because the individuals do become financially independent, they become professional, they have economic success, they put their money back into the community. In this last section, it just seems like time has flown. Can you talk about your programs? I know you have managed services and WS advisory services and TAP. And so would you talk about those?
Yes. I mean, I think one of the things that we now know from Amazon is options are important for consumers, right?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, the more, you know, I call it the Burger King scenario, have it your way. And when we do our TAP program, which is our talent acquisition program, it's essentially designed for companies that are looking for at least 5 and up number of students that want a specially designed program.
Okay.
Well, not every company, and you can't create a systemic solution if you're only catering to the very large companies. So we created an on-demand program for people with maybe 1 or 2 years of experience or a little bit more, where they can call up and say, I need one person. We need 2 people. And we may not need to give them the extensive education. Maybe we give them a little bit of training. And we're able to allow smaller companies to participate in this. And, you know, when you got 1 here and 1 there and 10 there and 4 here, mm-hmm. all of a sudden that becomes a big number.
It does.
So you can't win this battle by just catering to very large companies. They're important. But let's not forget about the small companies, the smaller companies, or companies that just can't find a way to come up with a down donation payment for
mm-hmm.
us. And the on-demand has been very, very successful for us. And we have places in, we had a place in Alabama, we had 1 person. And we have figured out a way to do that. We have a national recruiting system. And then we had another thing, you know, all of this outsourcing that's going on. We found, you know, the good old 80-20 rule, where 20% of what's outsourced abroad, people are unhappy with. They just didn't have an alternative. So we wanted to create what I call economic centers, managed service centers, where we could do some of that work off-site, still with the understanding that people would eventually get hired away. And I found something else. And I'll just give you an example. Right now, you mentioned, right, in quote, that there would be 3.5 million cybersecurity shortfalls.
Right.
Well, and everybody wants somebody with 5 years of experience. Guess what?
Of course.
You know, I'm tired of hearing them crying all the time because I can take a veteran or somebody and then within 6 months I can have them up and running. And by the time they wait these 5 years, I can have people out there. So I want to create a farm system.
Mm-hmm.
I want to go into cities and establish cyber and analytics programs where they're working for us and we get them on client jobs and maybe they have to stay with us for a couple of years before they'll get hired away. But we'll pay that insurance, and we'll send them to college while they're learning, and they'll work with senior people. That's an economic solution that's maintainable and sustainable in every aspect of what we're doing. So we've done call centers. We've done claims processing. We've put people into positions where it may not be their ultimate career, but we promise them that we'll continue to train them on things as they get themselves out of the poverty situations that they are in. And I wish we had more time, but I could tell you stories that you just wouldn't believe. You know, Dallas doesn't have a train system.
Right.
Many places outside. So how do you get these young people to work? We pick them up with Uber cars. We call them up in the morning. Some of them are sharing homes together. I mean, we don't really understand the poverty in our own country.
Mm-hmm. No.
And yet, they're talented. Most of them are talented, and they won't let me down. They just need somebody to believe in.
What role does self-esteem play? And how do you see it?
110%.
Well, I was going to just say, and how do you see it grow and develop?
We measure it as part of the instrument. And, you know, you'll talk to somebody who might say to you, well, look, I came from this poor neighborhood, and I worked really hard, and I made it. Why can't they? And I'll tell you the difference between those two people. One of them had self-esteem.
Mm-hmm.
And somebody helped develop it. When I was chosen out of a group of people to go into a special art program in a furniture store, and then I made music and art, a bum like me. I made music and art. What do you think that did for my self-esteem?
Oh, it boosted it, I'm sure.
So when I get a kid and I put him on the campus of Columbia University or Rutgers or Penn State or University of Michigan or North Florida, who never dreamed they could be on that campus, and they begin to realize that they do belong, you'll see that switch over. But you got to give people a chance. You got to give them time to develop.
Mm-hmm.
And we just don't have that in our gestalt, you know? Everybody's in a rush. Everybody wants a macro solution. Everybody wants to turn the country around in 1 year. You know, for every 20 kids, we have one client service manager. We get it.
Mm-hmm.
And you got to be 24/7. All right?
Yeah.
So you can build that self-esteem, and we can measure it. Because I'll take a kid with high self-esteem over someone who's smarter or has more engine power in terms of their intellectual strength. Because if I can get someone to believe in themselves, they will succeed.
What do your participants look like? Who are they? And I mean, I know they're between 18 and 20.
No, I understand.
Yeah.
It's a great question. And, you know, Porter at Harvard said it best. Companies that don't have a representation from their communities are going to struggle. I represent the community. You know, in Newark, you know what kind of young people I get? Portuguese, the ironbound section. If I'm in Florida, what am I going to get? I'm going to get a lot of, you know, Cuban and Hispanic and others. But if I go to Detroit, I'm going to have African American. So the beauty of all this is we represent the communities that are there. And that's really, really important in this equation. And I got to tell you, companies, boy, they love it when it gets going. And we have to help those companies learn how to simulate. That's what our service is. We teach managers how to develop people.
Okay.
Not because they don't want to, but nobody has time. I mean, that's what we do. That's our purpose in this whole thing. And when everybody walks away and it's a win-win, those are the kinds of things that last.
That's what matters, yeah. What level of employment are these participants going into? I mean, is it the basic base level, the lowest level? I mean, overall, what is their pay when they start out?
The way we would call it is early career, and it usually ranges between $40,000 and $50,000.
Okay, okay.
The call centers are a little bit lower. It depends on the area of the country you're at. You know, where you're going, and what, you know, we do everything from mechanics all the way to Java developers.
How do you do it? How are you funded? Now, it doesn't cost the participant anything, right?
Doesn't cost them a nickel.
Okay.
And they don't give me, I don't ask them for a contract. They can leave whenever they want. But they don't leave.
Okay.
So, you know, the companies put up the money, as they should.
Right.
I mean, we raise money. We do that. That's our secret fund in which we provide those other things that we were talking about.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we do almost 100 mechanics a year for United Rentals. We have somebody, one of my client service managers in northern Florida in Jacksonville, that is a retired naval officer. And we relocate people from all over the country to Dallas and Atlanta, and we educate them. And in 15 weeks, they get relocated somewhere in the United States. They get their tools, and they start a new life. That's one program. And then all the way to Java developers and all under the auspices of, I would say, from 0 to 3 years of experience. That's really where we're working in early career. But they grow so quickly.
And these last few, I guess we have a minute, let's talk about what is WOS Digital? It's something for the corporations. They use that to search for jobs. How does that work? I know you have a couple other programs I wanted to see if I could get covered before
right.
we end
well,
it.
Well, WOS Digital is preparation for what is being now called the gig economy.
Okay.
The fact that people will have multiple jobs at once, the fact that there'll be jobs that will only last a half a year or 6 months. And we wanted to be positioned to be the surrogate to help that. So we created WS Digital. We now have a database of about 100 people and growing, where we give them education and training. And then when opportunities come aboard, we're there to provide talent for periods of time in the hopes that we can keep them employed on a regular basis.
Okay. And in the community, I know that you offer workshops and classes through
yes,
the community.
Yes, very important. Our strategy is we go to a place around the country where a company needs us.
Okay.
Once we get there, we then start rolling out on demand for the smaller companies. But then we have another responsibility. This is completely funded by WOS,
okay.
where we go into the community and the high schools and the K through 12, and we just want to help. We offer free education in collaborations with schools or anybody else to help parents know how to get on LinkedIn, how to write a resume, how to be part of the digital era, how to put something up on Facebook responsibly. All of these things we do them for free. They're on our website. And we launched it in New York City to start. It's been incredibly successful. We've done almost 3,000 people. For free. So what we're doing is we're going beyond just getting people involved. We're helping the entire community, from kids that are in fourth grade to eighth grade to mom and dads and older people that want to understand how they can remain relevant in our society. You know, the whole thing with smart cities that are coming. I'm really worried about that. I'm worried about people being pushed out of cities because they cannot compete in a digital era because they don't have the skills.
Mm-hmm. So companies can contact you if they have a particular need, and you will see if you can satisfy that.
Yeah, our website has all that information.
Share it. Share your website. How do people connect?
WFORCE.org, WFORCE.org. And there's all kinds of ways of applying for work and also to get in touch with us. Or, you know what, I'm 24/7 too. And there's nothing more important than getting one person to work. You want to call me on my cell, 914-261-6142. Call me.
Wow. That's impressive. That is really impressive. In this end, what is the lift? Would you share what the lift is,
This is the farm system that I was talking about.
Okay.
We are now looking at, for example, putting 50 young people in a farm system and helping them grow and putting them through school and holding on to them maybe for 2 or 3 years until they have the requisite skills to meet the demand of cyber and analytics and all this other stuff that you were talking about.
Okay. All right. What advice would you offer to high school students or those who are in college and who are going through the changes of trying to identify a career choice? This, I see, seems to be a particular problematic area for many students. They don't have an idea of really where they want to go.
Well, I'd like to tell them to call us, but I'll tell you something else, which is, you know, most people don't know what they're talking about. Did you know that?
Mm-hmm.
I'm convinced of that.
Mm-hmm.
And I think a lot of people just don't know, but I think it starts with people caring, and it starts with the percentages. I think so many of these colleges and universities are just totally overloaded. They've become very large institutions because of the economics involved. And I think organizations like WOS and others that are trying to do, you know, perhaps God's work, and to go out there and experience things and go to open houses and go to places where people are searching for jobs, that's also helpful. To get a sense of what the market is looking at. And you know what? Read the newspapers.
Mm-hmm. Okay. You're out there. I mean, you're dealing with companies, you're dealing with participants, you're dealing with students, so you're seeing them in all different facets. What would you say about the high demand areas? You know, often we see a list of the salaries and a list of the job options and what's going to be open and what's good and what the future holds. I see high demand areas as information technology, possibly a lot of cybersecurity. But I want to know, what do you see? What do you see as those jobs that are going to have, you know, the most openings, the highest needs?
Here's what I would say. Yes, cyber is important, mm-hmm. and analytics is important. I think having a digital mindset, understanding what it is to work in a digital environment, using tools, whether it's, you know, Excel and all that other stuff, I mean, that's very basic. But how one communicates in a digital world, I believe, and the way I run my organization is we're very candidate-driven. I'm looking for hungry people. I'm looking for people who have certain types of skills that can evolve, because no matter what the needs are today, things are changing mm-hmm. so quickly. They're changing so quickly that what I'm really looking for is talent. And so I would concentrate on all the social media capabilities, being able to utilize those tools, and most important, to understand how to communicate. The soft skills are so important. And please, this is one thing that some people have quoted me on. You know what no means? It means no now.
Mm-hmm.
But it
right.
doesn't mean no 10 minutes from now. Who would have thought? Everybody told me that WS would never work. But Prudential put a bet on me, right?
Right, and you're there.
You gotta be persistent. Well, keep going. Don't expect no.
Thank you for all of your advice and your expertise. That's it for this edition of 411 Teen. To my listening audience, thank you for your time and your ear. Tune in next week, same time, same place, to get the 411 on 411 Teen. Teen was produced by Dr. Liz Holyfield. Technical assistance was provided by Ken Smith. If you would like to participate in 411 Teen or have suggestions for discussion topics, call 850-645-7200. 411 Teen archives are available as streaming audio and as downloads from WFSU.org. Check us out on Facebook.